Well, you slipped through the fissure too, did you? You came for demon souls. Or to save this land and be remembered as a hero. Hunting for demons? Try one of the Archstones. Now go. That is why you came, is it not? To this accursed Poletaria.
3, 2, 1, click!
I clapped.
I heard. It put me off.
Don't matter though, does it?
Bastard. No, it's fine. Yeah, it's a spike. It's an audio spike.
That's all
spike.
You need, isn't it? All you need. Cool. So, right.
Right, anyway, sorry. Here we go. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast where we share a solemn reflection on the nature of entropy and the inevitability of death and decay as we journey through a haunting, melancholy fantasy world, and Liam calls me a prick at least 4 times per episode. I'm John Richter.
Prick. And I'm Liam Martin.
And we are here, as always, to assess the merits of one of our favourite pieces of dark fiction, to establish whether it merits a place in the hallowed halls of the Hall of Pain.
Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha.
The amount of variety you've been able to sustain over our long
life. That was actually, that was based on, do you remember Biker Grove?
I do remember Biker.
Well, at the end, I think it was the outro, at the end, it was like, It's like a laugh. I always assumed it was Spuggy.
I mean, that's the only character anyone remembers.
Well, I know, PJ Duncan. Jeff.
Don't remember. What was Jeff's thing?
Jeff was the guy who ran the youth centre. Big moustache.
So that is a confession. You know when you come home from school and kids' shows were on because they started at, I don't know, 3 o'clock or whatever. And I think they used to, like, ramp up in adultness.
They did, yeah, that's right.
So, like, your 3 p.m. would be, like, kind of little kids' shite. And then your 3:30, 4 p.m., you're getting into good quality, like, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Yeah, and premium
then,
shit.
Yeah, and then, like, Nightmare would be on at about that time, which was my personal favourite.
Very good.
And then, but you get to, like, 5 p.m., as if 5 p.m. was, like, past your bedtime. Yeah. And then it would be the live action stuff that was more targeted.
That's right.
All
the
kids, so you get into kind of almost like Neighbours and Home and Away, like that kind of territory.
Well, you had, so on BBC it was 5:10. It was after news round, and that was like Grange Hill, Biker Grove, and then on ITV I think it was 5 o'clock, and that was like Children's Ward and
Children's
can't
Ward.
Can't remember what else.
I basically used to stop watching at that point because I didn't like the live action stuff. I only liked cartoons.
Oh no, I didn't like Children's Ward, but I did like Grange Hill, Biker Grove. I'm sure there were others.
I'm trying to think of any of any of the live action stuff that was.
I got a feeling Round the Twist might have been.
I was just going to say Round the Twist. That's a funny coincidence.
I got a feeling that was in the 5:10 slot.
Yeah, and I did watch some of that. Was bloody weird, wasn't it? We should do
that. Was weird. Yeah,
that.
We should be. I'm just going to say the same thing. Hey, I tell you what, we should do. Probably talk about today's episode instead of this. Bollocks that we're going on about.
That's a good segue, actually. Well done. Because the thing we're going to talk about couldn't be less...
Is bollocks?
it is bollocks. And it does exist. And it probably would have occupied a late slot if it was... No.
Put off, yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. Well, also, I'll tell you what else we haven't sorted out is who's even pitching this? Whose go is it? Is it you?
Well, that was kind of what I was going to say. I was going to say, actually, it's not bollocks because it's me pitching this week. T'other, but is it because you had a guest on last time, didn't you?
Why don't we say this is a special mutual pitch to ourselves?
Okay.
Because, as regular listeners will know, we are both great big fans of the From Software Souls, or the Soulsborne franchise, as people sometimes dub their games. So to clarify what we mean, there is a very, very popular and well-known series of games called Dark Souls, which is 3 installments. There was it's not really a spin-off, it's a completely separate game, but it just follows a very similar formula called Bloodborne. And we have episodes in our back catalogue of both Dark Souls and Bloodborne because we love them so much.
Absolutely.
We haven't done the other similar spin-off, Sekiro, yet, but we probably will, the samurai-themed one. But what we're bringing to you today is, well, let's explain. Let's explain what it is. When the original Dark Souls was nothing more than a little nugget of corruption in the mind of Hidetaka Miyazaki of From Software, who we'll get onto in more detail later, Dark Souls was way in the future. A game called Demon Souls was released in 2009 for the PlayStation 3 as a PlayStation exclusive. And that game was not even necessarily that wildly rapturously received in its native Japan, but it made its way over to the West, where it quickly became a revered, renowned, infamous in some ways, classic. And that game spawned Dark Souls, its spiritual successor. From Software became a massive global powerhouse. Hidetaka Miyazaki became a household name if you're in a household full of nerds. if your household is just me and you living together. And then to herald the release of the PlayStation 5, which though some of us are lucky enough to have got our hands on and many probably still haven't, Sony decided to release a beefed-up remake of Demon's Souls in, I think it was November, as a launch title. So we thought, what better excuse to go back to where it all started and gush about how good Demon's Souls is, basically. That's going to be today's show. Does that sound like a good synopsis, Liam?
Very good. Couldn't have put it better myself, because as you know, I struggle to explain things and talk in sentences and stuff. So I liked it.
Thank you.
Carry on.
Well, we compensate for each other's shortcomings, don't we? Like, absolutely, I talk endlessly about, just waffle on interminably. You're quite succinct. You're funny. I'm not funny.
I don't know about that.
I was going to try and do like I couldn't decide then to go self-deprecating or insulting, and both of them seemed unappealing. So I've blown it here, haven't I?
Yeah.
You're a prick and I'm not.
Whee.
So,
hey, that's my line.
I nicked it. I got in there with a little jab, little body shot. See how you respond.
No, don't. Hey, don't be down on yourself. Aww. You're a good guy. You're a good guy.
I try.
Yeah.
Well, so in terms of background on Demon's Souls, maybe we'll start there just to cover this off. And this is the usual. Like this show's usual sort of nuggets of trivia, it's just stuff what we found on Google. So may or may not be true, but I like the sound of it, so we're going to go with it as fact. The Demon's Souls project was apparently failing. It was perceived as one of From Software's, you know, it wasn't going very well, and the project needed sort of rescuing. They seem to be churning out loads of games if you look at their output in the noughties, like rafts of, there's one, oh, I can't remember the name of some of them, but the main series they had was Kingsfield, which...
That's right, and that is actually, does have a lot of similarities with the Souls games.
It's almost like...
In terms of atmosphere and...
Yeah, whatnot. Like sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Medieval fantasy, but in a sort of a dark, melancholy kind of way.
And rock hard as well.
And rock hard. So it's weird. This studio has almost been making, like, iterating on the same game for what feels like about 20 years.
Yeah.
And maybe that's how it ended up being so good, because they just perfected it over time. But very strange sort of...
Maybe.
There's so many recurring themes and repeated ideas when you play the games. It is quite... I suppose the worlds have these kind of cyclical aspects to them. Where there's a cycles of kind of death and rebirth that feature in the stories, but that almost seems to be a function of how they make the games, kind of thing.
Very good.
But yeah,
I like that. I'm nicking that.
It's cool. Yeah, it's pretty well. It's probably bollocks, to be honest, but sounds plausible.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently Hidetaka Miyazaki was just a relatively low ranking schmuck in the company. And that he sort of put his hand up and said, I've got a vision for this. I want to take ownership of this. So they gave it to him in a kind of, well, it's knackered anyway. How much worse can it get? And he ended up building this thing that has been a massive global phenomenon. Yeah. And now he's the president of the company. So good on him.
What? When did you kind of first hear about Demon's Souls? Were you kind of aware of it when it came out, or was it something you sort of found out about it later?
So what happened with me was my then missus, her brother was like a massive gaming aficionado. And one of these people, you know, like who spends all his money on, like, you know, like a massive, really good telly and a sound system. So whenever you went round to her house, he always wanted, or her family house where he then lived, he would be like, "Oh, come and look at this! Look how good this game is! Look at this amazing telly!" So I was always really bitter and jealous. And I remember him banging on about this game called Demon's Souls, and, "Oh, you've got to play it! It's incredible! It's incredible!" And I was like, "Yeah, sounds alright. You know, fantasy stuff. I like that. I'll get round to it one day." And then I just wasn't that bothered and never played it. And then Dark Souls really picked up in popularity and acclaim and was getting all rave reviews. And then you, as we talked about on the episode, you bought me a copy and I played it once, thought it was too hard, thought it was shit, didn't play it again for about 7 years and then finally got into it a couple of years ago. And yeah, I was so wrong because it's amazing. But yeah, Demon's Souls felt like the game that had kind of passed me by. So getting into Dark Souls so late, the only way you could play Demon's Souls is by going and buying getting a PS3 and playing it on that. And of course, by this point, like, the servers that were supporting the online components of the game weren't really running properly. No one's really playing it.
No, they turned them off, didn't they? Maybe, I don't know, a year or two ago.
Yeah.
It's probably longer than that. You know, how time just flies by. But yeah, I remember when they turned the servers off and it was kind of like, oh, yeah, that game's... I mean, you could still play it. You could still play it without it, but you do lose something, don't you, when you haven't got the online component.
And we should maybe touch on that as a feature of all of these games, or certainly of Dark Souls, Demon's Souls, Bloodborne, not Sekiro, notably, is this sort of online component where it's a single-player game. It's you versus the computer being manifesting in the form of shed loads of rock-hard baddies and then even rock-harder bosses, so that you sort of beat your head against this frustrating gameplay loop of death, but a bit of incremental progress and learning. Death again. There's, you know, the you died screen that pops up, which is kind of famous now, and you see it on nerdy t-shirts and stuff. Forgot what I was going to say. My train of thought has been derailed. What did I start
online,
off with?
Online.
Oh, online, yeah, of course. So, single player game, but the game has this very clever online component where it is aware of all the players who are playing it, and it shows you glimpses of those other players as like apparitions, almost as if you're briefly peeking into another dimension. And occasionally, you will either be able to summon players from their world to assist you in your quest, or conversely, you can invade or be invaded by hostile players and fuck each other over, basically. And it's quite annoying when it happens, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's already a hard game. I mean, it's really fun, don't get me wrong. It adds a lot to it. But I was playing Demon's Souls again recently, and Upper Latria, which we'll talk about all this in a sec, but a really hard boss fight. And as I was making my way up to boss fight to try and do it, like, for the 10th time, kept getting invaded.
That's so
and it's
annoying.
Just like, I don't need this right now. And it's like, so you've got this big kind of epic player versus player battle, and if you'd managed to survive that, then you've got this fucking boss fight. So yeah, at times when you see someone's invaded, it's like, oh shit. But at other times, I don't know, you kind of relish it.
Yeah, it's really funny though. And of course,
so it's a great system. Yeah.
It's brilliant. And like, the game even builds in these, like, little, you know, a menu of gestures you can make your character do. So, you know, that situation you just described,
right,
exactly that's happened to me. I'm on my way to a boss. I've been defeated by this boss 27 times. I'm getting to the end of me, you know, it's 3 a.m. I've got to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, my girlfriend's like, you know, what are you doing? You know, you're an old...
your girlfriend's packed her bags.
Yeah, she's left. She's stormed out. And I still haven't killed the bloody thing. And then someone invades you, just what you don't need. And then they kill you, because that's what usually happens, because they're usually shitloads better than me at the game. And then to rub salt into the wound that they've already rubbed salt into in the first place, they then, you know, press the button to make their character give you like a, way, you know, like do a little dance or something. And you're like, oh, I hate you.
I suppose if for some reason you're listening to this podcast and you're not a complete nerd, Well, welcome for a start. But if your experience of video games are only like, you know, FIFA or something, it's the equivalent of when somebody scores against you, them doing that really irritating replay thing where they play, they keep playing the replay, rewinding it and focusing on every player. That is what it's like when somebody just, you know.
Or is it maybe to give it, or what if a listener, what if a hypothetical listener, we have millions of hypothetical listeners, actually. We just don't have many real
ones.
We
do, yeah. I think we're one of the top podcasts. Yeah,
hypothetically. but what if a hypothetical listener doesn't play video games at all? Can you think of a real-life equivalent of what that feels like?
I suppose when somebody, maybe a sibling, tells on you,
okay, all right.
You get in trouble from your mum and dad.
Yeah.
And behind your mum and dad's back, they're giving you the two fingers.
Oh,
and like,
yeah. Like Buzz in
They were really solemn. Yeah, exactly. They were really solemn. And Mummy, he did this to me. And then she's like, oh, you bloody bugger, where's the belt?
You're gonna beat him. And then
probably shouldn't joke about that, should I?
No, I think you've described it well. You've described the feeling very well.
And then, yeah, they're behind just like, heh heh.
And of course, what this means is,
oh, Mum, oh, he's really hurt me. Nah. That's what it's like.
Are you?
Is it? I don't even know anymore.
Are you recounting an experience from your own past there? Possibly sounding a bit too specific. What does he say in Home Alone? He says, beat that, you little trout sniffer.
That's it, yeah.
You've got images. But you've not got a brother, have you? You've got a sister. Did your sister used to beat you up and bully you? Is that what you're trying to tell the listeners?
Massively, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, God, she could still kick my ass.
Yes, still beat you up and bully you. And me too. Please don't come and beat us up and bully us, Liam's sister, whose name I can't remember. Do you want to give a shout-out to your sister?
No.
Is she a hypothetical listener?
Yeah, she wouldn't hear anyway, so there's no point.
But of course, the flip side of that multiplayer invasion mechanic is on the very rare occasion when some bastard invades you and you manage to get the better of them and defeat them, it's dead good. Like the other day,
it's really satisfying.
Running around my flat, cheering and giving, like, I mean, as in, pathetic. You know, I'm nearly 40 years old and I've defeated someone in a game who's probably like a 10-year-old kid from Korea. And I'm there just giving the fingers to the screen. Yeah, fuck you, eat that, eat sword, dick. And, you know, that's pathetic, isn't it?
Well, I've been really terrible at PvP in Demon's Souls. I don't know what's up with me. I did have a couple of battles where it was like glitching, and I don't know if they were perhaps doing something on purpose to make it kind of glitch where there would be like huge frame drops and they could just batter me, or whether it was just like shit in Wi-Fi on my end.
What you're implying is that your crapness was somehow a function of someone like hacking into the game and, you know.
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
couldn't possibly be that you just would be shit.
Well, at Bloodborne, I used to be really good at PvP, though.
You were a younger man then, though, weren't you? Young man's game.
I was. Yeah.
We should have a big duel on it one of these days. We could put it on the newly revitalized YouTube channel, and people would want to see that. They could place bets.
What happens when one of us wins? The podcast is over.
Yeah, maybe that's how we could decide. Like the ultimate.
There's no coming back from that.
Maybe that's the season finale. The ultimate ruler of the Hall of Pain goes to whoever wins a one-on-one, one-off Demon Souls stab 'em up.
Pussy. I don't know why. It just felt like the right time to throw that catchphrase in.
Well deployed. Well, I was going to say, other than the PvP component, we should probably talk about the game, the story, the setting, because that's where it's real, other than the ingenious PvP element. I think the game's sort of melancholy feel, which the whole series is known for. You know, Dark Souls is very much mining that same seam. But I think again, this is another particularly the version I've played is of course the PS5 remake, which is a very faithful remake, I believe. But certainly the graphics are fantastic. Next generation looks incredible, but they've definitely got that same haunting, sad. The game's world is knackered and is in decline, and it's all ruined castles and corrupt kings and you know, demons that have clawed their way up from the bowels of the earth. And it's, yeah, very, very atmospheric.
Very, yeah. I think story-wise, it's a little bit, it's kind of easier to grasp than maybe some of the others. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I suppose my take on the story is, yeah, it's a bit more upfront with its kind of exposition at the start.
Yeah,
You're basically like, you're a warrior that has been brought to a kingdom called Boletaria, which is a slightly odd name. For some reason it doesn't. It just jars with me, that, Boletaria. And this kingdom is sort of in the grip of basically like an ancient demon or an ancient being called the Old One that has been...
Sort of Lovecraftian.
Yeah, absolutely. That Lovecraftian influence. We talked about that on the Dark Souls podcast. Clear influence on Miyazaki's work. And in effect, you are seeking power by slaughtering either, you know, the denizens of this corrupted world or the demons that are the sort of boss characters in effect. And as you butcher your way through them, you amass more souls, which is the kind of currency of power in the game. And ultimately, by the end, you're in a position to either overthrow the king that's brought this misfortune upon his kingdom and successfully lull the Old One back to slumber, which maybe suggests an ongoing cycle, and this is going to happen periodically, every so often, as a bit of a purge. Or you can go all evil, can't you, and destroy the world, basically, and become the villain.
Yeah, become the new demon lord with the Old One. And you can stand on the Firekeeper's head really aggressively.
Yeah.
Thought that was a bit much, did you?
Yeah, I think we talked before recording to admit that we both took the bad guy ending.
we both did the
shock horror. But I stabbed her in the back with a sword, okay, but I didn't ask the game to then trample her head. That was just gratuitous, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
But hey-ho, I got the demon's power, so omelettes and eggs in it. Never mind.
But it feels a bit more, like you said, up front with its kind of main premise. There's not as much to piece together as there is in certainly Bloodborne and the Dark Souls trilogy. But there is still that amazing feeling when you kind of uncover the lore of the land and, you know, the finer details are where I think these games really kind of excel.
Yeah, definitely. And it's because it's clearly been very well thought through, put together, the world, you know, you hear this term like world building gets kind of bandied around, but clearly Miyazaki and presumably some other people have sat there and thought very long and hard about many, many, many details of this game world. And you feel, therefore, like you are just peeking through a little crack and seeing a bit of something, but that there's this much bigger hole that you're kind of being partially exposed to. And all the games have that same kind of approach where lots of quite big ticket sort of plot information or information about the world is barely even mentioned. It might be told in just a bit of a throwaway line in an item description of some old sword that you pick up, but it's, so it feels very rewarding. Oh, I've read this item. Oh, okay, this is old King whoever, and he committed suicide because his child was possessed. And it's just, it feels like there's this endless like amount of stuff you can kind of chisel out if you want to.
And that's such a stark difference to most other games where, you know, you unlock hundreds of swords and guns and whatever, and it's just kind of like the same thing, but it does slightly more damage. It looks slightly different, and there's no kind of background to any of it. And with Demon's Souls and Dark Souls and Bloodborne, you're really rewarded for just taking the time to read a couple of lines from a new, you know, a weapon you picked up that you might not even use. But it's just everything just, I don't know, just has much more weight in the Souls games than many others.
No, I agree completely. And there's an element of, like, I feel like when I'm in these, you know, I've got a new one of their games, I'm in the game and I'm playing through it, I'm really enjoying just being in the world that Miyazaki and his studio have created. And I just want to spend loads of time in it. But equally, I do want to kill these bosses and make progress because I'm a sad competitive man. So there is that drive to complete and get to the end. But then whenever I do get to the end, there is that feeling of like, oh, I wish I'd taken a bit more time with it now. Because do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And also, just every new area you reach is genuinely really exciting. You really, truly want to see what is around the next corner and, you know, what that thing is in the distance and, you know, what kind of monstrosities you're going to find when you get there. And you don't always get that in a lot of games where the game world kind of feels like it's just copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste. Then you're kind of just trudging through without really taking any of it in.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's almost like we've talked about the multiplayer online, ingenious, innovative component. You could look at the combat. We maybe won't dwell on the mechanics too much, but fantastic, rewarding, satisfying, pacey, crunchy, challenging combat. You look at the world and the exploration aspect of the game. So forget the online multiplayer, forget the combat. Even if you're just wandering about and all this game was like a walking sim, even that would be good because there's so much cool stuff to just find and look at. It's just they've got so many things almost perfect. So hence the reason these games are so well regarded and 10 out of 10 reviews all over the place, I guess.
I'm really, again, I'm sure we talked about this during the Dark Souls. Certainly we would have in Bloodborne, but not officially a horror game, but, you know, genuinely really kind of, maybe not frightening is not the word, but kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
Sort of grotesque. Disgusting, grotesque, yeah. Really kind of disturbing almost, sort of monsters and, you know, even some of the human characters. But yeah, it's just brilliant. The art department and just what a job. The monster design is just fabulous.
Yeah, really kind of second to none. And you're exactly right. It's not, there are lots of tropes of kind of medieval fantasy, you know, knights and sort of ogres crop up in these games and dragons, of course, we see dragons. But then there's also these really surprising, weird, freaky looking, I've never seen anything like that before. What the hell is that? It looks like a, you know, inside out bloody, you know, there's real disturbing stuff to be found in these games.
Yeah. Down in Latria, when you venture deep down, like some of the monsters there were just horrible, and the plague babies in the
Valley of Defilement, the delightfully named
when you fight the final boss of that area. Yeah, it's just it's disgusting.
And the thing is, we could dwell on any one of these areas. You could do a podcast episode on any individual area because there's so much to kind of unearth. I wonder if maybe it is worth just skating through the. There are basically only five areas in the game.
Could
argue there's a couple extras, as we'll explain. But maybe if we just whiz through the different areas just to give you a flavour.
Yeah,
that
sounds good to me.
The diversity of the world and some of the best stuff in it. And I forgot to do a spoiler warning, but if you haven't figured out by now, we are spoilering this game. So if you do wish to play it with spoilers off, we won't go overboard with revelations, but we will mention
we've already told them the ending.
Oh yeah, shit, oh well, hey ho, retrospective spoiler apology rather than a spoiler warning. So in effect, you start the game you die at the beginning, so it gives you a little tutorial section and an impossible boss that kills you, and you get your first ever taste of the "you died" screen. And as a dead body, you're as a ghost, a spirit, or, you know, you're transported to the Nexus, which is this place that's kind of between the worlds, limbo type feel to it. And it's basically this really small but very tall kind of cylinder with winding spiral staircases that take you upwards. And this is where, well, there's an ever-growing cast of sort of dead people, losers, miscreants, and sad people sort of gathered there.
Yeah. And assassins as well. I did.
What's his name? I can't remember his name.
Oh, shit.
He's a recurring thing that's in some of these games. Like a You'll meet characters in the game who you can then bring back to this central hub location. And this, they've done this a few times where one of those characters turns out to be a complete bastard who starts killing off the other people.
Yurt.
Oh, what a scumbag. Yeah, I enjoyed it. His armour was good, though.
Really good. That's what I ended up
rocking.
Wearing, basically.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. His evil devil horns or whatever it is. But yeah, so the Nexus is, again, we won't go into too much detail, but that acts as the sort of hub. And from there, you're able to access the five worlds of the game. Interesting bit of trivia. There are six archstones, five of them lead each to a different world. One of them is just knackered and doesn't work, and the game offers no real explanation for this other than just telling you it's broken. And it's funny that in the original, my understanding is they just ran out of time and just couldn't finish it, so they just sort of broke it and left it in there.
Yeah.
There was some... Carry on.
I was going to say, isn't it the kind of explanation? It's like, well, that place is already been lost to the demons, so...
Which is very clever. Very clever cover-up that they ran out of time. But there was speculation that maybe to make the remake really special, they were going to actually finish that unfinished sixth world. And I think that would have been quite cool, and I wish they'd done that, to be honest.
Well, I wonder if they may do it as a DLC. I don't know.
You'd hope so. Any way of getting more content would be welcome, wouldn't it? I'd be buying that immediately.
But then would you trust, even though... So the team that remade it, Bluepoint Software, and... They've done a really, really good job.
Brilliant.
And they did a great job on Shadow of the Colossus as well.
Yeah.
But would you trust them to create the new area?
Yeah, they've shown their skill at...
I'm not so sure, faithfully
recreating and enhancing things. They haven't yet proven, or at least we have not.
I'm sure they could come up with a really cool-looking area, but would they just get those finer details right that you get with the...
Yeah.
From Software, I'm not,
It could end up,
but, we're all hypothetical, much like our listeners.
Yes, I was thinking to myself the other day, because I often think about the Souls games now on my own, or while I'm at work, and I was thinking, could they just go completely nuts and, like, make the sixth world, like, present-day Earth, and just have, like, some crestfallen knight wandering around, like, I don't know, Wigan Town Centre. It would be quite fun.
Yeah, just go rogue with it. Like, imagine that. Imagine the...
The fan reaction.
Outrage, yeah. Christ.
It'd be worth doing it.
It'd be funny.
So the five worlds that are accessible, that are not knackered yet... Well, they're pretty knackered, but you can at least go to them. The first one is... I think it's a castle, isn't it? I don't know whether it's sort of Boletaria's grand castle and palace.
Yeah.
And that's the most kind of conventional, you are infiltrating a castle that has already fallen and is crumbling and on fire and full of zombified people and monsters.
And
there's dragons now roosting. I love that when you see the dragon for the first time, he's got his mouth is just full of corpses.
I know. Yeah, that's great.
Ace. That is so good, because these are not like, sometimes dragons are like wise and they can speak, and these are not like that. They're just like animals, aren't they? They just eat people for a laugh.
Yeah, I suppose if you start the game, you probably, a bit like Bloodborne, I keep saying that, but when you start Bloodborne, it's like a Victorian kind of werewolf monster game, but then obviously the further you get into it, it just completely transforms. And this is kind of similar. If you start playing this, you think it was just a straightforward fantasy sort of action game, but obviously the further you delve,
you're absolutely right. But even in the first world, there are elements of the weird. So like by the end of that first level, the boss is in effect the sort of gelatinous gloops that evidently were once soldiers, because they're still holding shields and wielding spears, but they're not humanoid, they're just jellyfish blobs, which is very disturbing. Anything else on the first world specifically? Maybe we might come back to it for the final boss, but anything else that stands out to you?
We'll come back to it. I mean, there's bits in it that I think the one thing I don't like about Demon's Souls so much is the world tendency thing. So just to explain, it's like, it's kind of like in other video games, it would probably be classed as like a morality system, which is kind of generally pretty easy to kind of game. You know, you your answer back to some people like, no, you prick, and your your kind of morality thing will swing one way, and if you're really nice to people, it'll swing the other. In Demon's Souls, it's a little bit more kind of, meh, like, you don't really know what exactly to do to get it into, like, pure white or pure black. Pure black's easier because you just die a lot, but basically it's this system where, and events will happen if you get it into, like, pure white world tendency, and if you get it into pure black world tendency. And so there's a couple of bits in the first section. There's a character, Executioner Miralda.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you... I've heard of her, but I didn't encounter her.
I encountered her as a phantom. So she was the phantom version of herself. And she was rock on and killed me loads of times.
Yeah, okay.
Solid. But I got some sweet armor, so it was worth
it. See, I didn't even encounter her. And there's, you can actually get into the section where it's like the Executioner pits you can see and stuff. And so I haven't even done that, but...
But I think you're right.
I don't know why I brought that up, really. I'm just saying that there's more to do, even if you spent bloody 100 hours playing the game. There's still things that I've missed. And
but I agree with you about the world tendency mechanic. I think the problem with it is, it's great. Normally, games will just have this real binary, like, be horrible and certain things happen. Yeah, be nice exactly, and yeah. other things happen. And it's a bit too obvious and there's no shades of grey. In this game, it's a bit hidden. But the problem is, it's not linked to morality in any way. So what we want is more choices and more options and more grey. What I don't necessarily understand is like, oh, I've died lots of times, therefore the world's gone bad. Or
And therefore the world's hard. It's like, I'm dying like every fucking 10 seconds here and you're making the game harder?
Real sadists. But and that in itself would be fine in a way if it was drawn attention to. Like if the game told you like you're being punished for your failure, ha 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 ha, that would be quite cool. But it just sort of happens and you don't really know why. So I'm not.
It's not terrible, but it's just I just think it maybe is the one area that I think could be slightly improved on. And I mean they did tweak it a little bit. I think they made it a bit more clear in the remake, but still
bit fiddly.
Yeah.
So
basically, I want to be able to easily kind of game it either way, and I find it quite hard to do with the white tendency. But
yeah, agreed. Yeah. Yes, and we might touch on. There's a good example of that coming up. But yeah, the second world. Then, so if the first world is relatively straightforward, dragons and castles, the second world gets a bit more sinister because you're delving into a sort of underground. In effect, it's like a mine, isn't it? There's these sort of...
Yeah.
Almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Zombified sort of docile creatures just tunnelling away. And I think one piece of text tells you that they've kind of lost their minds. They don't even really know what they're digging for. They're just digging for the sake of it, which is quite a evocative kind of image. And the lots of them are just harmless. They don't even attack you, so you can kill them. No. But, you just feel bad for doing so. But then you do get the first hints of this encroaching, more malevolent force. So it's not all just sort of corrupt zombie-type people who don't really know or remember what they do. You get these fat... They're called the fat officials.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like sort of... Well, yeah. They are demons. They are apparently sort of canonically actual.
That's right, yeah.
They're just fat, disgusting slobs who laugh and chuck fireballs at you. And they're like... just, I hate those. I hate them.
Yeah, really. They... Great heels for wrestling fans among you. They changed the design a bit, actually, in the new one. And I know that sort of hardcore fans of the original Demon's Souls kind of prefer the old design.
Oh, yeah.
But I quite like the new design. I think they just look disgusting, basically.
Yeah, and they're quite tricky. They're not that difficult, but you can slip up and be killed by them enough times to hate them even more.
Oh, definitely, yes. Especially when you first encounter them. I think that... If you, it all depends what order you do it in, but I think if you did the first one and 1-2, and then the next one, the next stage you tried was with the mines, those initial fat officials are quite tough.
And as you delve deeper into this world, it does, almost a bit of a kind of obvious one, really, or a simple example of sort of environmental storytelling. But the game does not tell you in words anywhere, I don't think, that the mine has been taken over by an evil spider. Instead, all it does is you just start to see webs on the wall and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know what's coming. And then, interestingly, it's not just a giant Shelob-style spider. It's also got flame-spouting capabilities.
Yeah.
I thought that whole fight was really hard, but I thought it was brilliant. You know, this spider at the end of a tunnel chucking fireballs at you and catching you in its web. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it is a good... That's one thing I will say about Demon Souls compared to, I think, every other Souls game, is that the boss encounters, while they're not always better than the bosses from the other games, they're more interesting and more varied. There's a lot of... more gimmicks, I suppose. There's a lot more...
Yeah, it's like in the later games, they focused on the combat mechanics, whereas Demon's Souls, bosses have got a... It's almost like a puzzle. Like, if you can figure... How are you going to get close to this spider when it keeps chucking fire at you? And there's some really good ones that are really satisfying to figure out.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there are, you know, regular sort of battles where you're just fighting big hulking monsters, but... Yes, a lot of them, there are sort of unique twists on the just regular bosses.
Yeah, and we won't list every single boss, but it probably is worth mentioning this.
No, don't be stupid.
The second boss in this area is a notorious one because he's dead hard, isn't he? The Flame Lurker. Did you have trouble with him?
Yeah, I really struggled, really struggled. But again, this all ties into kind of, A, which order you play the game in, so you don't have to... go after this boss now. You can go to other areas first and kind of power up and get various items, but also the kind of build you play as. So you could play as like a mage and, you know, sorcerer and hit the enemies from afar with, you know, magical attacks. Or you could do what I did and, you know, sword and shield it all the way and really struggle against certain enemies in the game.
Yeah,
and this being one of them.
And yet another part of these games that we just failed to mention, you can pick for... There's such variety in character build and thus gameplay style. So huge opportunities for replayability. Again, that's been kind of masterfully done. And I've started a second go where instead of a sword-wielding knight thug, I'm now a wizard, old man wizard with white hair. And it's just completely different. It's, you know, zapping everyone with fireballs from miles away. It's cool. But yeah, the Flame Lurker is a sort of fiery ape-type creature that just sort of smashes you to bits until you get some decent quality.
Really aggressive. Yeah. There's kind of no getting away from it.
No, it's incessant onslaught in its fiery arena.
That and a certain other boss, which I kind of alluded to earlier, were, I thought, the hardest ones in the game.
Well, it might be worth... It will perhaps move on to the third world, which is arguably the best one. I think there's two candidates.
I think it is, yeah. It was my favourite, but I know where you're going.
It's called... So if the first world was Boletaria Castle, if I remember rightly, the second world, I think I forgot to mention, is Stone Fang. I think they're called the Stone Fang Mines. The third world is the Tower of Latria. And it's like, if Lovecraftian influences were just starting to crop up, this is where they just packed them all in. It's like Cthulhu monster mind flayers at every turn. Weird dark magic, people screaming, trapped in cells, transformed into hideous, disgusting, obscene monsters, dark, emerald glowing, disturbing lights everywhere. It's fucking brilliant, isn't it?
It's really good, yeah. The sound as well plays a big part in that, because you hear a woman singing, you hear someone crying for help, and then the mind flayers, which are the first kind of really, like you said, really kind of Lovecraftian monster you fight in the game. Well, depending on what order you go in. They ring these bells as well, so when you kind of hear that bell, it's, oh shit, where's that coming from? And this is brilliant. Yeah, this was my favourite part. The whole of it, that's kind of the prison bit, is like the first part. And then after you kind of get through the first section, you go to Upper Latria, which is just fucking horrible.
It's really...
this great big giant heart.
Yeah.
Just suspended in the middle of this tower. And
with arms. Yeah, a heart with limbs.
Oh yeah, it had arms, didn't they? Little arms.
And then there's a bit where, you, as you say, you're in the upper reaches of Latria, where they seem to have, you know, whatever misbegotten magic and science they've been pursuing seems to have almost, like, you're on these kind of platforms that are defying gravity. They're just sort of floating in midair. So you're sort of in the sky, But then there's a bit where you won't expect, you get into one of these like sort of cage, you know, those cages where they used to like keep people and,
yeah,
you know, lock you in a cage and hang you from somewhere until you starve to death. It's like one of them, but it's an elevator. And it drops you miles downwards.
Right down, yeah.
And it's just a swamp. Basically, it's a blood swamp with, well, how would you even describe them? Scorpion people.
Yeah.
It looks like two humans have been grafted together and then they've stuck a scorpion stinger on the back of them and their faces look contorted in horror and agony and they're really aggressive and they make funny noises and I had to turn the game off at that point because it was too much.
Yeah, just really, yeah, horrifying. Especially because you're not expecting...
to be down there?
Them to, yeah, you're just... It's just so unexpected, isn't it? You just suddenly at the bottom in this completely different environment when, you know, a few seconds before you kind of thought you had it sussed out, the area.
Yeah, and there was an element of like, really? You expect me to get out of this cage and walk in there with them? You're joking, aren't you? Oh, God. But...
yeah, and the noises they make as well, like, and crying and,
but then interestingly, yeah, the boss of that second stage, who's worth a mention again, is not so, I mean, they're pretty grotesque in a way because they're these sort of, well, they're called the man-eaters, and at first it's there's one of them and then the twist is a second one turns up halfway through the fight.
Yeah,
but they're more conventional, aren't they? They're not a grotesque inside out, you know, human blob of fused together corpses. It's just like a weird flying sort of gargoyle monster.
Yeah. The faces were a bit creepy, though, I find.
Yeah, not that you have much time to look at them because you're too busy getting smashed to pieces. Because I thought these were the hardest boss in the game.
Yeah, I agree. I really struggled. Well, I think one-on-one, no problem. I mean, they do knock you off. They knocked me off the side quite a few times. They only killed me normally, like, a couple of times.
Yeah, but it
was mainly,
I
kept mainly dying because I was getting knocked off or rolling off. But one-on-one, I could definitely... They're not that bad, but it's just the fact there's two of them. They're really hard to kind of manage.
Did you actually see where the second one comes from?
No.
So I only saw it once, which is really weird, and it's dead cool. The first man-eater just turns, you know, goes magical coloured and just separates into two.
Oh, really?
So it doesn't... It's not that the second one doesn't fly in from off-screen... or something, you know, it's not like there are two of them knocking about. There's one of them that just splits, you know, like an amoeba kind of thing, into a second one.
Right. I did not see that at all. Sorry. That's amazing.
So unless it's supposed to happen, like, off camera, and it was just a bit of a glitch, but I can't see why they'd animate it. So I think it was intentional, but I saw it once.
Oh, wow.
Saw it once. Really strange.
That's really cool. Yeah.
And then, actually, this level, Latria, follows the pattern of all but one of the other worlds where they have three stages, basically. There's stage one, hard. Stage two, even harder. Stage three is basically a final boss fight with not much of a level before it. And
yeah,
the final boss of Latria, what a brilliant... That is so good, isn't it? What an idea.
Yeah, really genius. Again, these unique boss ideas in Demon's Souls that haven't really been repeated since.
Agreed. Do you want to describe the old monk?
Well, it's just a withered old man sitting on kind of a sort of mountain of chairs,
like a throne made out of chairs,
yeah,
which are like
of thrones, yeah, throne of thrones,
throne of thrones,
and then his, but the twist being, it's kind of his robe that's the evil.
Yeah, he's dead.
Entity.
And his yellow dress is the evil thing, which, that's brilliant.
And what it does, it summons another human player in, and it kind of wraps around their head, and then you just fight another human. It's a really good idea.
As in another actual player, so it becomes an online PvP battle.
So you and I could become that boss
for someone else.
Yeah,
it's so good. That's such a good idea. I don't know why no one else has ever done that. It's brilliant.
It's really, really good. Yeah,
make another player from somewhere in the world the boss of Latria. It's, yeah, love it.
The only thing that annoyed me is nobody was like, I wanted to bow to my opponent before I fought, but everyone was just like straight away piling in. No, it's just like, oh, come on,
these people have no honour.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not like a Bloodborne. These Demon Souls kids, they're not like proper honourable Bloodborne hunters.
But no, really good boss. Good little cutscene leading into the battle as well. Yeah, really good idea. So that was my favourite area.
You can probably guess which one's my favourite. It's not the next one, but the next one is good. The next one, I can't remember.
The
Shrine of Storms. That's, it's castles again, but this time it's more like an ancient, crumbling, barely standing ruin. It's raining, so that's very atmospheric. And there's skeletons everywhere. The castle's full of dead, you know, they're not zombies, they're not sort of husks of people. They're just proper, full-blown Jason and the Argonauts skeletons with swords.
Yeah. Rolling towards you, roly-polies towards you.
Who do roly-polies, which is dead funny.
Good stage.
Yeah.
Bit annoying.
Hard. I found it hard. Well, yeah. Hard and maybe not in a... It's really hard to explain, but not in that enjoyable a way. There's a bit too much like walking along a cliff face and getting knocked off the edge for the 50th time by a fucking skeleton.
Those fucking flying shit as well.
Yeah, they're annoying. Very annoying.
But a good stage. It is a good stage, nonetheless. Good place to farm some souls as well.
And also features a good gimmick boss in that there's a blind boss, isn't there? Yeah. So if you keep quiet and stealthily and don't move, you can sort of outwit him and get some hits in without attracting his wrath.
And then the final boss to that level is quite a unique battle. You're kind of outside and there's just shitloads of these things flying around. And then one giant one, which if you haven't got a magic build, you kind of need to get this sword, which has this attack that can just send shockwaves through and
cleave the air and blast it with a windy blast. But yeah, they're like a giant manta rays that aren't in water. So it is a good bit of... Again, you've got the real kind of trope of skeleton warriors in an old castle, but then they just lobbed in some weird magical manta rays in the sky as well, which is cool. The fifth world, and they saved the best... Well, they saved the horriblest till last, maybe let's put it that way, is the Valley of Defilement. And it is literally a shithole, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, God, where do you even start? It's implied, I think, that these people were discarded as babies and just lobbed in the, you know, lobbed in the bin, basically, lobbed in a, you know, go down a ravine off a cliff. And they've kind of grown, a society has grown in the depths of this depraved swamp. And it's just poo and maggots and poison everywhere and plague-ridden rats, and it's horrible.
Really horrible, yeah. And it definitely is a bit of a toss-up between this and Latria, which is kind of my favourite, but I probably would go Latria, but this is a great, great stage as well. It's really hard. The bosses on this one were probably the easiest and kind of the lamest, but the actual journey to the bosses is just so intense because there's so many enemies, first of all.
Yeah.
And it's not just that, like, you know, you get poisoned by walking through the swamp for too long and you can't really see anything. And
you can't move because you're wading through a waist-high swamp that is clearly just human
shit.
Just poo, isn't it? It's just feces. It's just
horrible. It's kind of like shit fountains, isn't there?
Coming out of the walls. And and you feel like once you've spent a few hours in there, it's only a game, right? But you feel like you've not seen the sun for like weeks.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of emerge blinking.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When you come out of there and go back to, say, Boletarian Palace, where it's like, oh my God, this feels so normal and clean. And even that's like a shithole.
It's really funny. I think this is where maybe, and obviously this was an earlier iteration before they really nailed it with Dark Souls, but so obviously there's parallels with Blight Town, a very similar area in Dark Souls.
Yeah,
but the difference, the reason Dark Souls is better than Demon's Souls, in my opinion, is Dark Souls has got that, people call it the clockwork world design. So it's this really clever, interconnected, sprawling, gigantic map. And if you decide to, you know, visit Blight Town, you're going to be down there for hours because to get out of it, you have to fight your way out of it. and it's like a literal slog. Whereas in Demon's Souls, you've always got the option of teleporting back to the Nexus and going to a different world, which I know is good because it gives you that variety and you can play it in a different order. But it does give you almost like a get out of the shit card, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that is true actually. Yeah, because when you were stuck in Blighttown, you were stuck there, weren't you? When you got past a certain point, it was that thing of like, well, it's the same distance to go on is to go back. Well, not that you knew at the time, but you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like it's too far to go back now. And
it was therefore a massive relief when you finally flipping got out of there or fought your way through there to the other side, either or. You felt actually relief, like real relief. Whereas in Demon's Souls, you can always just go, oh, you know what, this world's a bit too hard. I'll just bin it off and come back to it later. So it's just not quite as immersive, maybe.
This one had an interesting design, though, because it's kind of like you kind of basically do a huge circle, don't you, around?
Yes.
Because you know when that initial bit, you're going up those kind of stairs and the little platforms and whatnot. But once you kind of get into that main swampy sort of area, you're almost doing, this huge circle around. Because if you do literally go all the way around, that's how you unlock that shortcut, which I wish I'd found before I fought the boss, albeit I beat him on my first go, but still. You still kind of get that sense of like you're really going on this big, long, epic journey. And you see basically, when you get to the other side, it's like, oh yeah, that's where I came in and I've done all of that and made it through. It's like, yeah. So you still get that sense of relief, but it's just slightly different than Dark Souls, where once you're in, there's no getting out. So, and I agree. And in general, I do prefer the Dark Souls interconnected world compared to this.
Which they never quite managed to replicate in any of the follow-ups. Bloodborne had it a bit.
They haven't.
But Dark Souls 2 kind of failed on that front. So did Dark Souls 3. So did Sekiro to an extent.
3 kind of had it a bit, but not quite.
It was more linear, wasn't it, 3? 3 was like you started in a place and you quested through to an end. Certainly more so than it didn't.
Yeah,
it's that, like you say, this even within this one level, that satisfying moment of, oh my God, I'm right back at the beginning, but I've opened the shortcut. Yeah. It's really satisfying. That's one of the best things the game offers, I think.
In general, there weren't as many shortcuts in Demon's Souls as the others, which kind of made areas like Shrine of Storms a little bit annoying, because you had to do that. If you got beat by the boss, you kind of feel like, oh, right, I've proven myself by getting to this boss now. There should be a shortcut, because I've gone through that big kind of rigmarole of getting here. So come on, give me a shortcut. I've proven myself, give me a shortcut, but a lot of the levels don't have that. And Shrine of Storms in particular.
Yes.
That journey from the...
from the Archstone to...
To the old hero.
Yeah, the second boss is particularly...
It's such a pain in the
ass. I agree with that. I agree completely about that specific bit.
Although, having said that, sorry, just with the Valley of Defilement, getting to the second boss in that, when, like I said, you go around that big circle, and I actually didn't unlock the shortcut until after I beat the boss, but it did make the boss battle more intense. I mean, God, if I had opened the shortcut, maybe it wouldn't have, but it did make that boss battle like, Christ, I've got to beat him in his first go, because I cannot do that again.
It was more of a deliberate design choice. Dark Souls is do this hellacious journey once, unlock a shortcut, and then have a quicker run, much easier ride to get, skip that bit, but fight this really hard boss 25 times and then eventually kill it.
Yeah.
Demon's Souls is do this horrendous gauntlet, finally make it through to the boss, have a decent chance of killing the boss on your first go, because they're not that hard.
Generally, they were easier, weren't they, the bosses?
But if you do fail, your punishment is you've got to do that entire slog again. Ha 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 ha. So maybe just a bit different.
Minus one or two exceptions, but that is kind of feels like it.
And the second boss of this world has a funny name, doesn't he?
What's the second one?
The Dirty Colossus.
Dirty Colossus.
Just thought that was quite a funny name.
Yeah, the first one's what was the first one? The Leech.
The Leechmonger. It's just a pile of maggots.
Yeah.
But the second one was just, it's like you're expecting to almost meet the boss, like Dirty as in Colossus, the boss in the real sense, like the person in charge. But you don't meet that at all, and at least not at that point. You meet this, like, golem that they've fashioned out of poo, basically, and it's called the Dirty Colossus. It's like a tree trunk smeared
with... Dirty Colossus. That is a good name, actually, isn't it? The Dirty Colossus.
it really made me laugh.
Sounds like someone you'd meet at, like, a big 6'5" bloke you'd meet at the pub.
They call him the Dirty Colossus. You don't want to know why. And then the final boss of this level is a complete surprise and starts to really... I mean, this has been done in a few games. Shadow of the Colossus we touched on, you know, it did this. Spoilers for Shadow of the Colossus, actually. Oh, God, minefield. This idea of making you start to question as the player, oh, are my actions actually good and motivated by good things, or am I actually an evil force and doing being a horrible bastard here without realising it? Because you make it into that third stage, which is we've had one swamp, this is the swamp below the swamp, and it's sort of like blood, guts, pus, like you say, little infant creatures that give you the plague if they touch you.
Plague babies, I think they're known as.
So you can't even go in this swamp. No. You just die straight away. But so if you were expecting a real disgusting, disease-riddled, leprous, you know, bloated sack of pestilence as the supreme boss, you couldn't be further from the truth, could it?
No. It's can't think of a name now. Sorry, my.
I think it's Maiden Astraea. Which sounds like an Australian saying Australia, but it's not. She's not an Aussie, as far as I'm aware.
And yeah, she's it's a weird one, isn't it? Because to look at it, you know, like you said, it's like she's kind of become this sort of leader for these people that have been just discarded. So she's kind of like they see her as kind of a saviour. But some of the filthy woman that you meet, the merchant,
yes,
hates her. And she was from the church, wasn't she?
Well, it's implied that, like, there used to be some sort of clergy. And I think there's even in the chapel where you fight the first boss in Latria, there's a stained glass window of Maiden Astraea. So it's implied that she's either vacated her throne or she was some sort of worshipped religious figure who's been kind of replaced by this old monk and all his corruption and evil magic and disgusting blood swamp scorpion men. But it's like she's gone on this pilgrimage and ended up becoming the god of these, like you say, these misbegotten poo people.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad and quite nice of her to do that, so you feel a bit bad that you have to kill her.
And then, yeah, you kill her.
Well, she raises a corpse from the heap of corpses in the corner of her house, and his name's Garl Vinland, and he's like her protector. So she isn't even really a boss, is she? She's just, you kill him.
No, you kill him. Or you can just shoot her from miles away, which is what I ended up doing.
And then she just died. I killed him, and she doesn't put up a fight. She just lets you kill
him. No, I know. What I did was I went to fight him, but he was literally just blocking that way. And I could have beat him, but he healed, and then he managed to get me. And it was like, oh, you prick. And then I tried the other routes where you go to the right-hand side, and I tried to drop down, and I just got killed in the swamp. But what I noticed when I went around there was that he kind of changes his position. So what I did the next time is I went around there, noticed again that he had, like, fallen back closer to her. So then double back on myself, he wasn't blocking the way anymore. So I kind of was able just to fire some bows off and shoot her. Without him coming to attack me, which
sounds pretty weaselly.
Isn't in the spirit of the game, yeah, very much so. But well, you've got to do what you've got to do to survive in this world.
Absolutely,
so.
It's a hostile world.
I could have beat him though. I could have beat him, but yeah,
you could.
He was glitching out on me again.
Are you going to use that excuse in real life as well? Like, you can't be. Oh, I was going to come to your birthday party, but. It started glitching.
Bus glitched out. Yeah. but again, it's like you said, it makes you kind of question, like, oh, what am I doing here? But then it, at the same time, why does the filthy woman hate her so much?
Yeah,
there might be a reason.
It's a bit ambiguous. Again, the plot's open to interpretation, and there are lots of interpretations online, lots of people speculating on the lore of these games, and we are not going to bother doing much of that, because
it's been done. It's some great YouTubers and podcasts. And
some second-rate ones as well.
Massively, yeah. But no, that's really interesting about the whole Soulsborne series is, well, we mentioned it earlier about the items, you know, you can find out a lot about the world from the items, and sometimes it makes things even more confusing, which is why it's great that there are, you know...
I think we mentioned it on the Dark Souls episode, but it's worth mentioning again because it's a great story. Miyazaki apparently used to read those fighting fantasy game books and other books as well, which we've done an episode on because they're brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because he's Japanese and they weren't... I'm not sure if they weren't translated and he had broken English or if they were translated but just not very well. And he said he basically sort of couldn't understand the books properly as a child. So to him, it was like reading a book with half the pages ripped out. And that's what he's trying to produce in his games, a feeling of mystery and that some of the plot's missing or obscured, which I love that. I think that's ace.
Oh, that's brilliant, yeah. Really good. I mean, on paper, you'd think, oh, that's a bit lazy, isn't it? But it's so much better.
It works. And maybe it works because it's not just write a book and then rip half the pages out. Maybe it works because he does that process in a very careful, surgically precise way. Although he's not entirely all hits. You know, for much as I think Demon's Souls is really good, Dark Souls is a masterpiece, Bloodborne is amazing. There's some missteps maybe in the other Dark Souls games and Sekiro to an extent, although they're all still really good. So I'm going to stop criticising him.
He wasn't that involved with 2, was he?
That is my understanding, yes. And I think everyone thought...
Somebody else directed it, but... I mean, he was a producer on it and stuff, wasn't he? And I think he was a consultant on it, but...
And I think fans thought that because of the perceived failings of 2... which is generally regarded as the weakest of the series, people thought that because he was back directing the third was going to be this massive return to form. And there's flaws in the third as well, I would say.
There's definitely flaws. Having said that, the more time that's gone by since I played it, the more it's grown on me.
I would like to play it again, yeah.
I see videos pop up, you know, my recommendations, and I'll watch the odd one, And yeah, I don't know. It's just thinking back on it. It's like, yeah, that was quite good, that bit. And maybe I should play it again. But I don't know. I kind of like it more now than I did when I was playing
Interesting. And this, I mean, again, we won't, obviously, we covered it on the episode. So check out our Dark Souls episode from Series 1, where we talk about Dark Souls 3 and 2 and 1.
And just to make a point, though, I don't feel that way about 2.
Same here. I forgot about 2 quite quickly after. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, yeah. Oh, yeah, I still enjoyed it, but I just keep thinking back to moments in Dark Souls 3 where I don't really do that for 2.
Interesting. And definitely, you know, to be clear, we would recommend you play all of them because there's some great stuff in all of these games.
Don't talk for me. <That's joking. laughs>
And we'll probably do a Sekiro episode as well soon, I suspect. If you ever bloody complete it.
Yeah, I weirdly started playing it again recently because I'd got the PS5 and so I was moving everything over. And so I wanted to check it that my saves had transferred over without any hiccups. And so I dropped back into it and I remember the last time I played it, I was really stuck on this boss. And yeah, I just beat him like, I think it took me 2 goes. And it wasn't like a fluke either. It was like I was dodging, I was parrying and I was just like, do you ever get that when you leave a game for a bit and go back? And
although I've not been back to Sekiro since I couldn't kill the final boss and gave up because having sort of watched a few videos since then, I realised I was just playing it completely wrong, and you know, running around like a headless chicken instead of blocking and parrying like I was supposed to. So it might be good to go back and sort of play it correctly, but
yeah.
I've just not built up the it's just too daunting.
But yeah, I think I may get on that next, I think.
Good lad.
Just thinking, yeah, I may get on that next.
Plenty to talk about.
I've got
about.
Something I need to play to review. But yeah, I think, maybe I'll do Sekiro next.
Go on.
Although, mate, I've only just... you know, I've been doing session in Demon Souls for so long. Maybe it needs another month.
Yeah, I
but soon I will go back soon. I'll go back soon. You did what? Nobody needs to know this. Cut this shit out.
They might be fascinated. Well, I suppose in the interest of time, we should try to conclude on Demon Souls, and we haven't covered the final boss. But maybe let's not. Let's just leave it there. As a lingering...
Yeah, that's a good idea.
The one vague thing we haven't spoiled is what happens when you've slain all of these archdemons and you can access the game's final villain, is what actually happens.
So you kind of just... I will say one thing, is that we've gone through the five different kind of worlds. At some point, you're stopped at a certain point in the first world from going any further until you've done something else in the game, which you can do quite quickly. But I think most people seem to agree that actually that the first stage, Boletarian Palace, you should probably save it until the end. So that's what I did. So you go back and then you kind of get you're kind of in the end game then.
Yes.
And there's a good couple of little twists, I think, at the end.
Yeah, really, really good stuff.
Which we won't spoil, but yeah, some nice ideas.
It's one of those things where you just wish you could kind of delete it all and then play it all again for the first time. You know, delete it from your memory, I mean, and then... But because it is great. Just a couple of things I was going to mention. One is, we've touched on how From Software have these recurring ideas, you know, swamps made of shit being one of them, seemingly. Seems fascinated with them. They've also got the idea of the crestfallen warrior or the crestfallen knight. And the Nexus has one of those, just a glum-looking bloke who's like, I've died so many times, I've just given up on life, I'm just going to sit here. I quite like that character that they keep having. Yeah. Good to see him. Hopefully they keep as a bit of a mascot. And the other mascot is, of course, a man after your own hairstyle, Patches.
Oh, that man.
He's a scamp, isn't he?
Yeah.
He didn't get me with his trick, though, and I haven't bothered to look. What happens? Does he just kick you up the arse and you fall into a volcano?
Well, I let him get me because
it's funny.
The game glitched out. No, I'm joking. Because there's two times you can encounter him, and I don't know if you encounter him once and you can't encounter him in the other place or what, but basically I encountered him in the mines. Is that where you encountered
him? Yes, correct. And I killed him because I wanted to see if he had anything worth having, and he didn't.
Basically, you go and get this treasure, and then one of those great big... I don't even know what they're called, actually. The great big kind of flaming...
Salamander, lizard, insect monsters.
Just drops down and you can't get out.
So does that mean...
You can kill it, it explodes when you kill it, but you can still kind of get out. But
is that implied then that he was colluding with the with the monster? That doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense at all. Unless he kind of had like a little piece of string or something to
to pull it down. Because in the other games where he's appeared, there's been a lot of kicking you up the arse off the edge of a thing. He's done that a few times, hasn't he?
Well, he does that because the other time you can encounter him is in the Shrine of Storms. There's a bit in there.
Okay.
Did you not
get
him there?
No, I didn't. I did not.
No, neither did I. So I don't know whether...
But he's
just if you go there first.
He's basically
I'm not sure.
His only character traits seem to be he's.
But he kicks you up the arse.
Yeah, he's jovial. He hates clerics. He's usually prepared to sell you some stuff, and he has a pathological need to trick people into situations where he can kick them up the arse, usually off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, the demons haven't got to you, have they? I'm in luck. Wait, you see that pit? It's filled with treasure. But I'm having a little trouble getting to it myself. Go on, have a look. They're more riches than I've ever dreamed of. That's it. That pit just there. Go on, get a little closer. Take your time starving to death. Then I'll sell every last trinket off your corpse.
I wonder if he's based on maybe there's a real person out there that Patches is based on.
I love the fact that, yeah, and in Bloodborne, for some reason, he's a spider.
With a bald head?
Yeah, with a human bald head, yeah.
That still kicks you up the arse? Or at least it pushes you off a cliff, doesn't it? That little tinker.
Yeah, it's quite weird seeing him as well, because the faces in the Demon's Souls remake, they're really kind of detailed, aren't they? And they're like really weirdly animated.
Yeah, they're a bit cartoony maybe compared to the normal Souls games. So he looks a bit not quite how I thought he would look, but equally I quite like it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Completely agree with that. Did he show up for you as well in the Nexus?
No, because I just killed him as soon as I saw him.
Oh,
I was like, here he is. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to kill him, actually. And then I was sad that I did, because I missed out on getting kicked up the arse.
Yeah, so I let him trick me. But yeah, like I said, I didn't see him again in the other place he can show up. And I didn't see him in the Nexus either. So I don't know whether maybe that second one's like a tendency thing or I don't know. But yeah, Patchy is a great character.
He is a great character. Well, is there anything else you would wish to draw attention to before we make our decision, our suspenseful decision about whether Demon's Souls is going to make it into the Hall of Pain?
No.
I think we've done it. We're done.
I think we've done it, yeah.
I don't like to speak for you, but I'm going to venture to suggest that...
You better not.
You probably would put this in the Hall of Pain, am I right?
Yeah.
Me too. Well,
we put worse in.
We have put some.
We put everything in, literally everything. apart from one.
For a notable exception. So yes, it's going in because it's great. From Software are great. I hope they keep making these games. Don't change the formula. They have to cock it up eventually, don't they? So maybe Elden Ring is going to be when they finally try and do something different and mess it up. But they're on a real run, aren't they?
Well, I mean, you could say that, in a way, Sekiro is a departure from their kind of normal style. And it was still very good, but maybe that's the equivalent of them messing up, is just them doing something slightly different.
But they still won loads of Game of the Year awards and got loads of 10 out of 10 reviews, yeah. Didn't it? Or, you know, so it wasn't exactly
I
a
just
flop.
Don't want to believe that they could make a game that I didn't like. So.
And for anyone who's unaware... And anyone who's inexplicably still listening, but is not that much of a gaming fan, Elden Ring, which is mooted to be released this year, with very minimal information having been released so far, which I like, is, of course, George R.R. Martin is on board to help write the sort of world backstory, which is a fascinating prospect.
That's probably why it's been delayed.
Yeah, good point, because he never finishes anything, does he? That scamp. Him and Patches. Gah.
Yeah.
Just sat around kicking each other up the arse instead of working.
Somebody should kick him up the arse.
Wait. Yeah, right? In fact, get Patches round to George R. R. Martin's house to kick that blooming lazy slob up the arse. I can't say that, can I?
Yeah, we want our game and our book.
Yeah, we want. And a better ending for the show as well. For TV series and a crap ending. Why, yada. So there you go. Demon's Souls added to the Hall of Pain. Bang! Efficient.
Yes.
Only took us 80 Ooh. Minutes to figure that out. Do you have any closing remarks, Liam?
Nope.
Neither do I.
Goodbye then, everyone.
Goodbye, and we'll see you very soon for more natterings of a nightmarish, dark, sinister nature. Thank you for listening. As usual, quick punchy ending this time instead of my usual ramble. Search for me online, John Richter. That's John with no H. R-I-C-H-T-E-R is the spelling of Richter. Oh dear, I've started rambling. You can find my books and other sinister side projects. Search for Liam Martin online, spelt like Liam and Martin would normally be spelt. You can find Liam's excellent video game reviews and journalistic career. And also search for Dark Natter on YouTube specifically. Annoyingly, you have to tell it that, yes, you meant Dark Natter, not Dark Matter. Unless you also want to search for Dark Matter, because there's probably some quite interesting stuff about physics and the universe on there, if you're interested. Anyway, and you'll find our newly revitalised YouTube channel, where you can see the entire back catalogue of the show, only in audio form, except for a couple of select episodes where we have gone video. Not yet with me and Liam, though. I have to coax him out of his shell, but I'm working on him. Watch this space. And we will speak to you all very soon. Stay safe, look after yourselves. Goodbye.